Do you love Yankee baseball? If so, this is the show for you. Welcome to Pinstripe Talk with your host, Nick Delahanty. Welcome to another edition of the Pinstripe Talk podcast. I'm your host, Nick Delahanty. We truly hope that everybody enjoyed their Thanksgiving and the Thanksgiving weekend. Hopefully you didn't do too much shopping as you prepare for the holiday season. Make sure you keep listening to our show as the holidays roll on. You can find us on Simplecast, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Google Play Music, you name it. Our podcast is on it. Make sure you continue to interact with us on social media. At Pinstripe Talk ND on Twitter, and my personal account at Nick_Delahanty. A lot of ways to interact with us. As the hot stove keeps heating up, we'll continue to provide you with all the latest news and updates surrounding the New York Yankees. There's a couple of topics that we'll discuss on today's show. The Yankees made a minor move this past week, sending Ronald Torres to the Chicago Cubs. We'll break down that trade and what it means for the Yankees, especially with regards to their utility spot. We'll also take a look at the Yankee starting rotation. Patrick Corbin was in for a visit this past week. We'll discuss if Corbin is a realistic option for the Yankees and what the Yankees might do prior to the start of the winter meetings. We'll also look ahead to those winter meetings, see what the Yankees might end up doing during those couple of days. And also, we'll take a look at the biggest trade so far in baseball, the trade that sent Robinson Cano, the former Yankee, back to New York, but this time to the New York Mets. All that and more on the Pinstripe Talk podcast. Now, a lot of people are upset about the Yankees trading Ronald Torres. Torres was traded to the Cubs for a player to be named later or cash considerations. Mainly the reason why everybody is upset is because Torres was well-liked around the organization. He was well-liked around the fan base, well-liked around the players in the clubhouse. You name it, he was a guy that the team liked having around on a daily basis. However, baseball is a game where you try to get production out of every spot on your roster. And in my opinion, the writing was on the wall that Torres was short-lived in the Bronx. Why? Well, look at the numbers. In 2016, his first year with the Yankees, Torres made 72 appearances. So, you know, he saw a lot of time, basically almost halfway through the season, probably about 50% of the Yankees' games. And then his role increased in 2017 as he played in 108 games. And then you look at last year, went down to just 41 games. And we all remember, he spent a lot of time in AAA. It wasn't like the Yankees had a rhyme or reason to keep him around. They were more focused on keeping their roster intact for what they had. And yes, there were holes that needed to be filled that kind of handcuffed the Yankees. However, they were in a position where Torres wasn't in a position to make an impact. So heading into 2019, when the Yankees have clear goals of winning the World Series, I just didn't see a fit for Torres. I didn't see a way that Torres was going to impact this big league roster. Let's face it, you're not getting much out of Torres offensively. Yes, he's hit for a high average over the last 2 years in his sparing time with the Yankees. However, you're not getting much power. You're not getting much speed. And you're not getting much in the walk department. So Torres is a guy that, yes, he's a good fielder in multiple positions. You saw him play second base, shortstop, third base for the Yankees. Also played a little outfield when the team needed him to. But he was a guy that the Yankees definitely could upgrade from. And of course, you're going to have fans that are upset about the move. Let's face it, every move that you make, you're going to have people that love it and people that hate it. Unfortunately, Torres didn't have much of a role with this team, especially with the young talent they have coming up. But it will be interesting to see how the Yankees do fill the utility void, and I think that we're going to have to hold off on that until we see what the Yankees end up doing with other positions of need. You know, how do they fill Gregorius' hole until he comes back? What happens in the whole Manny Machado and Bryce Harper sweepstakes? Do the Yankees jump in last minute and make a move for one or maybe both of those guys? A lot's going to be dictated by what the Yankees do this offseason. And if you're looking at the team right now, the logical solution would be to have Tyler Wade fill in as the kind of utility guy. You know, a guy 24 years old now. Yankees seem to be really high on him. He did appear in 36 games in 2018. In his time in the big leagues, he really struggled offensively, if you look at the numbers. But he's a guy that, throughout his minor league career, has been solid offensively. And you just hope that he can eventually figure it out in the big leagues and be that guy that the Yankees think he can be off the bench. You know, the versatility's there. You had him play second base, shortstop, third base. You saw the Yankees try to play him in the outfield a little bit. A guy with some speed. Guys like that are versatile. And when you can find them for a cheap price that are under club control, it's even better. You know, a lot of people want Marwin Gonzalez from the Astros. He's going to get a big contract this offseason just because of his versatility. Is that something that the Yankees want to pay for a versatile player who really doesn't have an everyday spot? I think the Yankees would rather opt to use their funds in other places, especially the starting rotation, instead of having to pay for a utility guy. And if we can fill that void, it's only going to help the Yankees down the road. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll discuss the visit to the Bronx that Patrick Corbin made this past week. We'll also discuss Gary Sanchez and the rumblings that the Yankees might be looking to upgrade at the catcher position. And we'll also take a look at the Robinson Cano trade to the Mets. All this and more on the Pinstripe Talk podcast here on Apple Podcasts, Simplecast, Google Play Music, TuneIn Radio, and Spotify. We hope that you are enjoying the Pinstripe Talk podcast. If you have something to say or would like to comment on something that you heard on our show, please feel free to contact us via social media. You could contact our host, Nick Delahanty, on Twitter by tweeting at Nick_Delahanty, or you could send us an email, pinstripetalk@gmail.com. And we're back on the Pinstripe Talk podcast. I'm your host, Nick Delahanty. A reminder to our listeners, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, make sure you give us a review, rate our show. Every bit of feedback is appreciated. Please take some time out of your day while you're listening to our show to give some reviews. It goes a long way for us on Apple Podcasts. Let's get back into the Yankee talk. I don't want to bore you with more advertisements for myself. The Yankees had Patrick Corbin in for a visit this week, and they tried to basically give him the royal treatment to get him to sign in the Bronx. And this was part of his free agency tour. He took a stop in Washington to visit the Nationals. Then he went to Philly to visit the Phillies, and then, of course, ended up in the Bronx. I'm sure the Yankees pulled out every stop in order to try to get Corbin in pinstripes. You saw the images on Twitter of Corbin on the big screen at Yankee Stadium. You know, Corbin is a well-known Andy Pettit fan, wears the number 46 in his honor. I could definitely see how the Yankees would be favorites in this talk. And then you get the report from Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic, where he says that at Corbin's wedding, his younger brother was his best man. And during his speech at the wedding, he ended up pulling out a Yankee hat, which got the applause of the crowd. So I'm sure that Corbin's family would love to see him pitching in New York, as they are close to the ballpark, you know, New York natives. Corbin, being an Andy Pettit fan, I'm sure would love to pitch in the same uniform that his idol pitched for so many years. It's going to come down to financial incentives. And what I mean by financial incentives is that, will the Yankees offer him enough to get him to put on the pinstripes. And we'll have to wait and see. I'm not 100% sure what they're offering. There might not even be an offer on the table right now. The visit could have just been an informational type of visit, as Brian Cashman mentioned on the Hot Stove at Yes Network. Corbin is a guy that I think the Yankees must get to round out their rotation. And from all the rumors that are circulating, it appears that Corbin wants to be the first domino off the board. He might beat out any of the other big names on the free agent market to get his deal done before the winter meetings, which I believe start on December 9th. So the Yankees could have their rotation set prior to the start of the winter meetings. And why is that important to this Yankee team? It is huge based on the fact that they can go into the winter meetings and worry about other things. They can worry about their bullpen, the back end of the bullpen. Do you bring back a Zach Britton or a David Robertson? Or do you try to reunite with an Andrew Miller? Then you could look at the possible shortstop options while Didi Gregorius is out. Does Manny Machado fit? Will he move over to third base when Gregorius is back? There are a lot of questions surrounding this Yankee team, especially given that they want to win now. They're in a position where they're ready to win. So Brian Cashman needs to allocate his time and efforts to make sure that the roster from 1 to 25 is ready for a deep postseason run. So if the starting rotation could be fixed before that, where all the GMs go and all the executives and players show up to negotiate contracts, a lot of moves happen during that winter meetings. That would be a huge benefit to Brian Cashman and the Yankees to have the starting rotation basically set. Because if you add Corbin, here's your five. You have Severino, Corbin, Tanaka, Paxton, Sabathia in some kind of way, shape, or form. And that could differ, you know. Aaron Boone could mix and match his rotation however he pleases. But if you look at that five and compare it to last year's starting rotation, I would think it's a huge upgrade considering the two left-handed arms that you added to the mix. And let's not forget, Jordan Montgomery will be back at some point this season, probably around July. So you have six capable starters right there and then that you can rely on. And yes, injuries happen, things happen. You know, a guy like Paxton has never thrown 200 innings in the big leagues. You have other guys throughout the farm system that you could possibly rely on for spot starts, or maybe you acquire a veteran that you could stash in AAA for the time being to provide insurance. But if you can add a guy like Patrick Corbin, and the price is something that you can live with, I think all hands on deck, you go out and you get a Patrick Corbin because he makes you that much better. And I think the Yankees realize that, and that's part of their thinking process in terms of their starting rotation. If you don't have to trade any more prospects for a starter, by all means, you take every opportunity you can to go get that guy that you think could be an ace in your rotation. Now, let's say Corbin doesn't sign, and say maybe Mike Rizzo and the Nationals get desperate and they offer him a big contract that the Yankees don't want to match. Or the Phillies, who everybody's saying are big spenders, they come out and wow Corbin to sign there. I think the Yankees turned their attention to a guy they acquired at the deadline in Jay Happ. I think it's simple. You know, a guy like Happ will probably demand a 3 to 4 year contract. He's 36 years old, probably looking to cash out one more time while he still can. You got to remember, he had a great second half with the Yankees. He's a guy that I think the Yankees would be more than willing to bring back at the right price, given that they realize he could pitch in the Bronx and that he can also pitch in the American League East. It's a different animal pitching in the American League East than it is anywhere else in baseball. And I feel that he's comfortable pitching in the Bronx and would welcome coming back with open arms. Now, a lot of people throw out the name Nathan Eovaldi. I think Eovaldi, after his postseason, is going to get a bigger contract than the Yankees are willing to dish out. Plus, I don't really trust his elbow, considering he's been a Tommy John guy already. A guy that throws hard and has great stuff when he's on. But at the first time around, really wasn't great for the Yankees. He was decent, but really didn't wow anybody. He's a guy that I would stay away from, but that's just me. For the right price, I would consider it. But I just think after that whole postseason run, somebody who's desperate for a starter is going to overpay a guy like him. It'll be interesting to see how the Yankees' rotation plays out. And I think that we can have some kind of answers to it by next week, which gives the Yankees an upper advantage. The Yankees might not be done with their rotation, but by the time the winter meetings start, they could basically have their 1-5 set for now as they look forward to the 2019 season. Going into last postseason, I was really weary about the Yankees' rotation, and it ultimately was the reason why the Yankees didn't go far. Now, looking ahead, if you told me that I had Severino, Tanaka, Corbin, and Paxton in a 5-game series, in any particular order, I really like my chances in that series. That's 4 quality arms that teams are going to have trouble matching up against, especially if guys like Paxton and Tanaka and Severino pitch their ability. If all 4 of those guys can pitch to the caliber that they're capable of, the Yankees rotation could be very scary in 2019. So I'm all for signing Patrick Corbin, and I hope that this deal ultimately gets done, because I think that it's a tremendous upgrade for the New York Yankees. Getting away from the starting pitching talk, one thing that has really frustrated me during the offseason has been the talk about the Yankees possibly trading Gary Sanchez, or looking to upgrade at the catcher position by trading for a guy like JT Realmuto from the Miami Marlins. Now, to me, this makes absolutely no sense. Why would you give up on a guy who just turned 26, who has the capability of hitting 30 home runs and driving in 100 runs for a guy who's 2 years older than him? It makes no sense. Yes, Realmuto is probably the best catcher in the game right now. He's coming off a monster 2018 season. And we all know how poor Gary Sanchez hit this past season, hitting 186. He did hit 18 home runs in 89 games, but he wasn't that same guy that he was in 2017. I just can't see how you give up on a guy that has that ability so soon. You know, I get it. You're in New York. It's what have you done for me lately? But Yankee fans need to take a step back and realize when this guy is healthy, he's an all-star caliber catcher. And I think that now that he had his shoulder surgery, which wasn't even on his throwing shoulder, it was on his left shoulder, which could have been part of the reason why he struggled offensively this year, I think he's going to be back on track. If you could get 20 to 25 home runs from Sanchez and 80 to 90 RBIs, you sign up for that every single day. But this guy has special talent. And the Yankees understand that he has a special talent. And I don't think that they're willing to give up on him just yet. Let's remember, he's 26 years old. He's not even near his prime yet. And he's not a free agent until 2023. Say you trade for Realmuto. Number one, he's older, as we mentioned before, almost 2 years older than Sanchez. He's free agent eligible in 2021. So you basically lose out on club control to sign a guy who's older and is coming off, you know, a couple of good seasons in Miami. And I don't think the Yankees want to trade for Realmuto to have him play first base. Realmuto's only played 22 career games at the position. I just think it's Brian Cashman doing his due diligence, seeing what he can make happen this offseason. I feel like Brian Cashman's a guy that doesn't leave any rock unturned, and I think this is a similar situation with Realmuto. I definitely don't think that he's ready to give up on Gary Sanchez, and I think that fans should really step back and realize that you have a special talent right here. He didn't show it last year. He struggled. We all know the defensive struggles that he had, especially in the postseason in 2017. But I'm sorry. I'm not giving up on a guy that hit 33 home runs and 90 RBIs just a year ago. I want to see if Gary Sanchez could bounce back. And I feel that he can now that he'll be healthy come the start of next season. I just hope that Sanchez proves everybody wrong. Because I think that over time, people are going to regret wanting to get rid of this guy. Because when he's on and he's healthy, he's a middle-of-the-order bat that not many teams can match up with. You can make the argument that he's the best offensive catcher in the game when he's on. It's just a matter of if he could get back on track. I think the Yankees are fully focused on helping him get back to the player that they know he can be. And it'll be interesting to see if he can actually get back on track and be that guy that the Yankees are hoping that he can be in the long run. Because if he can, this Yankee lineup could be very scary in 2019 and beyond. As we saw 2 years ago when he made a big splash with him and Aaron Judge hitting in the middle of that Yankee lineup. Now you add a guy like Stanton to the mix. You know, you have Gregorius when he comes back, a power-hitting shortstop. Gleyber Torres and Miguel Andujar. When those guys are on and they're productive, this Yankee lineup is not one that many pitchers want to face. We're going to take one final break. When we come back, we're going to break down the Robinson Cano trade to the Mets and what it means for the Mets moving forward. This and more on the Pinstripe Talk Podcast. You're listening to the Pinstripe Talk Podcast with your host, Nick Delahanty. If you're enjoying our show and want to interact with us, you can follow us on social media. You can find us on Twitter at PinstripeTalkND. You can also follow my personal account at Nick_Delahanty. You can also shoot us an email, PinstripeTalk@gmail.com. There are many ways to interact with us throughout our show, and we love hearing the feedback from our listeners. If you are listening on Apple Podcasts, we remind you to please leave a review and rate the show. Every bit of feedback is important to us, and we appreciate all the feedback that we do get. Now, let's head back to our show. And we are back here on the Pinstripe Talk Podcast on Apple Podcast, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, and Simplecast. You can find us on any of those outlets. Make sure you share the link with your friends. And again, on Apple Podcasts, make sure you leave us some rates and reviews for our show. Let's get into a little bit of Mets talk. Something that I really don't like to do, but this Mets talk involves a former Yankee in Robinson Cano. New Mets GM Brody Van Wagenen is wasting no time as he made probably the biggest move of the offseason so far as he acquired Cano and All-Star closer Edwin Diaz from the Mariners in exchange for a couple of prospects, most notably first-round pick Justin Dunn, who was the Mets' first-rounder in 2016, and Jared Kelenic, the Mets' sixth overall pick in 2018. The Mets also sent Anthony Swarzak and Gerson Batista as part of the trade. Now, you might be asking yourself, why would the Mets want to take on the remaining 5 years and $120 million that Cano has on his deal, being that Cano is now 36? Well, the Mariners are sending the Mets $20 million to go along with taking the contract of Swarzak and also Jay Bruce. Now, the issue for the Mets is you're only going to pay Cano anywhere from $12 to $14 million over the next 5 years, which isn't bad. The problem persists that when Cano gets older, what do you do with him? You have him under contract till he's 41 years old. And for now, if you're looking to win now, it makes sense. Cano is still a valuable hitter in a lineup. You know, he's coming off a season where it was short, given that he was suspended 80 games for steroid use. But he's still a guy that hits for a high average. He's a guy that uses the gaps very well. He's a guy that will fit in at Citi Field. The problem is going to be, number one, where do you play him? You figure that he'll play second base for the time being until they realize that his defensive metrics don't add up to what they need it to be? And B, what happens when he ages? Does he start declining? What happens if he starts declining and now he's part of your roster and there's no way to kind of dump that salary? But if you're the Mets, you're looking to win now, it makes sense to add a guy like Cano who could fit well in the middle of their lineup. The main piece of this deal is Edwin Diaz. You know, the closer coming off a monster year with the Mariners where he saved over 50 games. He's coming very cheaply, too. He only made $571,000 in 2018. Now, get this. He's not arbitration eligible until after 2020. And he's not eligible for free agency until after the 2022 season. And this guy is 24 years old. So you have him under control for at least 4 years, which will take him up to his age 28 season. This is a great guy to add to the back end of the bullpen. If I was a Mets fan or the Mets organization, I would feel very comfortable giving him the ball in the ninth inning. You know, a young guy, heck of an arm, throws over 100 miles per hour. It's kind of like a slingshot when he throws the ball. But this is the main piece why the Mets were willing to give up so much and to take on Cano's contract in order to get such a special closer. And what you might be saying to yourself is, you know, there's a lot of closers on the market. Why not sign Craig Kimbrel? Why not go out and sign a Zach Britton or a David Robertson? The answer is simple. A guy like Craig Kimbrel is looking for a 6-year deal, according to reports. Why would you give a guy like that, who's much older than Diaz, 6 years and a lot more money when you could acquire Diaz and have him under club control, where he's not going to be as expensive? Being that they're getting their closer for a smaller price, they can go out and sign a David Robertson to be a setup man, or a Zach Britton, or find guys on the market that can fit the back end of the bullpen. This move allows the Mets to make other moves and keep their cap at a position where they're comfortable. Being that Diaz is not overpriced, the Mets have the assets now to go and add more pieces to the puzzle. As you can see, they're trying to win now. Now, for the Mets, there's one thing that doesn't make sense to me. There's rumors that they want to trade Noah Syndergaard. There's no way, unless I'm getting something that makes me better now, am I trading 3 years of Noah Syndergaard. You have to really wow me with a deal. And then there's reports that the Mets are trying to trade for Corey Kluber from the Indians. So why would you turn around and trade Syndergaard and then go and trade for Corey Kluber? That to me makes no sense. It's either you're all in or you're all out. And if you're all in, you keep Syndergaard and you add from there. If you want to add a Kluber to the mix to add a dominant three to that rotation, then so be it. But there is no way, if you're trying to win now, that Syndergaard is not on this Mets roster next year. But now let's remember, the new Mets GM was Syndergaard's agent. What does he know about Noah Syndergaard that's making him explore trade options for the right-hander? Does he know something that we don't know? That remains to be seen. But if the Mets are all in, I think Syndergaard has to be part of the puzzle. I think if they do trade him, it would be absolutely dumb on their part to give away such a talented right-hander unless they get something in return that really pushes them over the edge for 2019 and 2020 and beyond. It looks like the Mets are trying to win now. And you know what? Good for them. They made some moves that they're worried about the present rather than the future. You can't always hug your prospects and hope that they become stars one day. You have to give up something to get something. And the Mets were willing to do that. It'll be interesting to see how this trade plays out and how Cano is able to hold up, especially given that there's no DH in the National League. Will that affect him as he ages? And how will he impact the Mets and basically dictate how their roster looks in the future? The Mets just have to hope that Cano can play second base for at least 3 to 4 years of this contract and then possibly use him as a utility guy playing second and first off the bench during the final years of that contract. But again, it'll be interesting to see if Cano can hold his own in the National League and can stay healthy and on the field. Because we do know already that the suspension that he already faced, if he has another one, it's going to be a much deeper penalty. That's going to wrap up today's show. As always, we appreciate everybody taking the time to listen to our podcast. As the winter meetings approach, make sure you continue to listen to us for all the latest news and updates surrounding the New York Yankees. Anything that happens with the New York Yankees, we love to discuss it with you. Follow us on Twitter at PinstripeTalkND and my personal account at Nick_Delahanty. Shoot us some emails if you have some topics that you want discussed on our show at PinstripeTalk@gmail.com. And make sure you continue to give us rates and reviews on Apple Podcasts. Look us up on Spotify, Google Play Music, TuneIn Radio, Simplecast. However you want to listen to us, we're more than happy to have you aboard. Once again, I'm Nick Delahanty, and this is the Pinstripe Talk Podcast. As always, let's go Yankees, and we'll see you next time.